This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And joining us via technology, our regular guest, Jeff Reynolds, senior editor at restoration-news.com, senior investigative researcher, Restoration of America, former Oregonian, now Florida man. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, I don't know if you noticed, I was trying to find the best place for myself to stand outside here because I got all this sunlight and it's kind of, it's washing me out, you know, so it's like 89 degrees and I just want to make sure I have my lighting right, you know.
Find the shade. And
You poor thing. My gosh.
Yeah, it's a struggle down here.
Yeah, well, here it's like 53 and cloudy, so there you go.
It's almost the same thing.
It's close.
Well, we had like a 30 degree temperature swing the other day. We went from like high 80s to, wasn't high 80? It felt like it.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are you going to do? It's springtime. Springtime in the USA. All right. And I always say, too, restoration-news.com, we've got a couple of articles we're going to talk about on today's show that are really, really good. But I wanted to kind of start off with you guys. I've been seeing a lot of this, and I'm getting like a feeling. It's like, do conservatives actually want to win? Because it seems like the outrage machine, and when everything is going wrong, that the clicks are there, the money's there. And it's starting to feel like, I mean, you look at what's happening on the national, at the federal level with the SAVE Act. And I'm, you know, if you're out on X, there is so many people who are just absolutely verklempt over the fact that one dude is holding this up.
Yep. And it's John Thune. John Thune, yeah, we knew this when he was selected as Senate leader that he was questionable at best and was at best lukewarm about the Donald Trump agenda, the Trump 2.0 agenda.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is what you get when you get a compromise in place. You know, at least it wasn't Mitch McConnell this time, but John Thune isn't much better, right? So the problem is he doesn't want to push this forward. He doesn't want to push voter ID forward. But he hides behind this idea that he's somehow preserving the traditions of the Senate and the collegiality of the Senate and, you know, the world's most august deliberative body or whatever they call themselves. But those days are long gone. I mean, those days, if they still existed, they were destroyed in 2013 by Harry Reid, who nuked the filibuster to get Obamacare passed.
Exactly.
So if we haven't acknowledged as a party, as a group of people trying to push an agenda, that our opponents are willing to do whatever it takes, legal or not, to get the laws changed, then we have to be able to use all the tools in our toolbox to push our agenda to counter theirs. We don't have a choice. We may not want to fight dirty, but we have to fight dirty in order to fight back against what they're doing.
Well, I just sit here and go, look at the wins in terms of voting and representation that we've had. The Texas redistricting, which was held up initially by Joe Biden, now became reality. And then these Democrat states, the blue states that tried to redistrict their own way, breaking their own laws, all have been overturned at the court level. This ruling from the Supreme Court about not being able to use race to identify in the southern states. I'm saying they're going, these are all wins pushing us in the right direction. And yet we're going to sit there and hold it up and try and keep those wins from even being a part of things going on.
Right. You know, you saw that play out in both Alabama and South Carolina that refused to move forward with their redistricting plans to get more Republican seats. You also saw that with Indiana. But last week, Indiana was a huge rebuke to the Mike Pence establishment wing of the party. Mike Pence and Mitch Daniels were lobbying in favor of all of those incumbents that voted not to redistrict in the middle of the census cycle. And Donald Trump and his organization came over the top with millions and millions of dollars in the primary and primaried five of the seven Republicans that refused to act on the redistricting. So that was a giant rebuke of the establishment, who didn't want to actually move forward on this agenda item. And so it's going to be too late in Indiana, but at least those long-term, long-sitting establishment Republicans who have become barnacles in their state capital instead of change agents who are willing to push an agenda forward, those guys are all gone, or 5 of 7 of them are gone. And then I think 1 or 2 of them retired as well.
But in many cases, I mean, we're ever in the thick of primary season right now, and you've got a lot of states, even red states, where you've got some of these senators. I mean, they're like one of, I think, in Idaho, he's 82. He'll be 88 when he ends that term. And yet he's probably going to win. And so you've got the constituency still voting for these people. So the narrative is, well, they sit on this committee or they sit on that committee. They wield all this power. We can't risk somebody new. Yet on the same time, you've got people smacking their keyboards, frustrated as all get out about what the establishment is doing. It's like, make it make sense.
Well, yeah, if you show up in the primary, maybe you could actually have an effect on the outcome. That would be helpful.
Yeah. And how many people? We were talking about voting numbers in Oregon. I think, Hunter, they're up to 14% right now on ballot returns. But people don't even get involved. I know, 14%. Yeah. Woo, throw a party.
Yeah.
But back to your point, I mean, the idea that some Republicans would rather continue getting funded for a fight that they should have already won is pretty well established. That's pretty much the basis of the entire nonprofit 501c3 world that continues to put out white papers and get the same funding they get every year and build their endowments to, you know, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars while not actually accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
I have often referred to this as the PLO strategy. Yasser Arafat of the Palestine Liberation Organization back in the 80s and 90s was offered everything he wanted by Israel. He a two-state solution, an end to attacks on Hamas and Hezbollah, and all of everything he demanded, he was given by Israel and the United States during negotiations, and he rejected all the offers. And this is even under Bill Clinton. He rejected everything because he was too busy making money hand over fist and living as a billionaire in Qatar. He was too busy with that to actually claim victory. So it's a similar situation in the nonprofit world, in politics, both Republican and Democrat. It's a lot easier to, you know, continue to grease the skids and get all that funding than it is to declare victory and move on to the next fight.
Right. I mean, where's the incentive on that? Go ahead, Hunter.
Well, I always go back to the late, great Rush Limbaugh. He used to readily admit that he wanted a Republican president. He wanted Republican control because it was better for the country. But at the end of the, you know, but his pocketbook always got boosted as soon as a Democrat won the presidency, because advertising dollars came in, ears turned over to a station to hear how he would respond when the liberals were in charge. So I'm sitting here going, I understand it. At least he admitted it, that financially this is a benefit for me. But I believe in his heart, he truly wanted Republicans to be able to come in and make big differences. But I know he was disappointed in their outcomes as much as we are today.
Yeah, no, I don't think Rush ever stopped fighting to get Republicans elected, including at the presidential level. But he had no choice but to acknowledge the truth, which was his ratings went way up when there was a Democrat to kick around in office. Right.
And is it like human nature's default to want to just be outraged? Is it more fun to be outraged than it is to actually win and get what you want?
Ask an Antifa member.
I'd rather.
Ask what?
Ask an Antifa member.
Yeah, I'd rather just be, you know, happy with the way life turned out, and you know, I'm a simple man. I don't want to be angry at everything.
I'm right there with you. It gets exhausting, and after you've been in the fight and in the trenches for a while, you kind of just want to sit there and go, "Can we just be okay right now? And all the problems we've been working to solve, when we actually can have a chance of getting them solved, let's just solve them," because it is exhausting. And you see that. I mean, in the NGO world, you see that, frankly, in the podcasting universe, which we're not going to dig into too much. But it is. Right. It's clicks and it's money, and you look at, it's like, do they not see the damage that they're doing? Do they not see that the problem isn't getting fixed? And in some cases, it's getting worse. And I would posit, yeah, they do. But the incentives are too great.
Well,
part of this is also that, you know, we've got this adversarial political system, right? We've got a two-party system, and we're constantly at each other's throats. I heard Dennis Quaid interviewed over the Reagan movie that he did last year. He had a really interesting point. You know, we need both sides, right? Mm-hmm. We need both sides to flesh out the full argument over issues and come to a compromise solution. I thought that, you know, I wasn't necessarily sure I agreed with him that we need Democrats, but, you know, for the sake of argument, you know, he did make a compelling point that if we have two sides arguing, it's like our legal system. If we have two sides arguing on each side, then we come to the best possible solution. So, you know, we do need that in our political system, but after a while, that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? It becomes its own machine where we just keep feeding into the fight instead of the solution. So it's a balance that we have to strike. But I would much rather see Republicans and conservatives and conservative think tanks who were more focused on victory and accomplishing things than simply feeding coal into the furnace of the adversarial fight.
Yeah. Amen on that. Let's go ahead and pause there and take our first break again. We're talking with Jeff Reynolds with Restoration-News.com, and you're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care and Color Tile of Salem.
All righty, we're chatting today with Jeff Reynolds, senior editor at Restoration-News.com. And Hunter, you sent us the story. It's kind of building on what we were talking about, is like, do y'all really want to succeed? Do you want to win here? And this kind of more goes to sort of, this is Multnomah County, a successful women's shelter to be closed by Multnomah County amid budget constraints. So kind of lay out what the story is for us, because it does fit in here.
I saw this on the news this morning, and it just kind of, it was one of those things that I just scratched my head. Okay, so Multnomah County, and as the overall state of Oregon, we talked about earlier this week that mm-hmm. when we started really digging into this, you know, we need to end, you know, it's a homeless crisis and we need to fix it. You know, the homeless population has tripled since then. And I go, so Multnomah County has a $70 million budget shortfall in their homeless outreach programs. So their solution to that is they are going to close this woman's shelter. And I can, on one hand, I can understand, because it is a leased facility. It's an old, like, it's an inn. I mean, it's something inn up there. So it's a privately owned property that they're leasing out to provide homeless shelter. But it is done for women, in particular, women who are fleeing domestic violence. Yeah. It is the second, if you look at success rate of these shelters up in Portland, Multnomah County, transitioning people from homelessness into stability, this is number two over the last like 5 years in their ratings. And this is the one they're choosing to close, this one, because of this budget shortfall. And I go, you add that into the other stories we hear about, you know, some of these homeless shelter areas, which are really just open air drug dens with a fence around them. And mm-hmm. there's really no oversight. It's, you know, anybody can come in high, drunk, whatever. It doesn't matter. And I go, but you're feeding millions of dollars into these programs as you're shutting down a successful woman's shelter. And I just go, it's so government. It literally, across the board, whenever government has a shortfall, what do they cut? They cut teachers. They cut police. They cut fire. They cut emergency services. They cut road work. They don't cut the things that are extra or not working. They cut the things that are, because then it forces society to say, we need to fund these better.
Yeah, and I would encourage you to go out to kptv.com, because there's anecdotes and there's quotes in here from women. There's a woman who was struggling with cancer, a woman trying to get back on her feet. This shelter appears to have had a success rate in doing what we all hear all of these NGOs want to accomplish, and here we are with it on the chopping block.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would point out that the homeless industrial complex, especially in the state of Oregon, has turned into a giant scam and laundering scheme.
Yes.
So, and we know this, we've seen the numbers, and we're starting to now dig into some of the fraud that's been going on with Medicaid reimbursements and all sorts of other stuff. We've started digging into that at Restoration News, mm-hmm. along with other things like, you know, the COVID loans going to fund the illegal alien defense fund against deportation, you know, that kind of stuff. So blue states are rife with fraud because the local officials, you know, the one party rule, they realize that they're able to skim stuff off the top and create a basically a jobs program for all their friends. So that's what goes on in Oregon. That's we've been uncovering that in Michigan. We're mm-hmm. About to start looking into Wisconsin. We've seen it already happen with the Quality Learning Center in
Minneapolis.
Minnesota. Even. Yeah. Yep. So, and or as my coworker called it, Minnesomalia. but you know, and we've seen it in California. I mean, just today, Dr. Oz announced that they're cutting reimbursement to 800 fake Medicaid home health organizations to the tune of like $1.5 billion annually.
Wasn't you that know, wasn't so, J.D. Vance there and basically had to pick his jaw up off the floor when he heard that?
Right,
like what?
So, yeah. Uh-oh, we're in trouble now.
Oh my
I need
gosh.
To make a phone call real quick.
And I just it makes me want to pull my hair out because it takes us right back to what we talked about at the start of the show. Here we are in Oregon with the first, you know, a real chance of changing leadership at the top, the governor's seat, city council seats. All of these things are right now, you know, 5 days left to vote on them, and we're at 14.6%. And I go, do Republicans right. really want to win?
I know.
Listen, the TV doesn't tell people that the fraud is going on. So, and the radio, you guys do what you do for an hour a day, but you know, how much are they actually hearing about what actually goes on at the state government or city government? People aren't paying attention, and the news isn't, you know, cluing them in. So how are they going to know?
Well, I mean, maybe that's where the Republican Party comes in. Just, you know,
the
tossing
Republican
that
Party?
Out there. Yeah.
Any Republican Party.
but okay. Specifically in I Oregon, mean, the Oregon Republican Party. I haven't seen a lot of messaging coming out of them.
Right. Yeah. No, it'd be nice if there were something coming out other than retweets or, you know, well, maybe get on a radio station and talk about the issues we're facing.
Well, reality is the fraud in Oregon is never going to be even looked into until there's a change in leadership. And yet here we are knowing it's there, knowing it is running rampant, especially in the homeless industrial complex. And we can't get off our butts to vote. And I don't know, is it a bullhorn on the side of the road yelling about these things? What would it take to get people off their tails and out to vote, especially in a primary where our local elections have so much at stake right now?
Well, and we see that even in the Republican Party. Greg Smith out there in Eastern Oregon has faced multiple ethics complaints over his cozy deals with certain industries, and he can't even be primaried. So the Republican voters aren't paying close enough attention either. So it's a real mess. It starts with awareness, and it starts with messaging, and it starts with creating the narrative that not creating. Promulgating the narrative, because it's pretty easy narrative to make, that there is rampant fraud in the state of Oregon because of one party rule. And if you ever want to clean things up, I mean, if you don't care, then fine, you know, keep voting Democrat. But if you want to clean things up, you know, it's time for a change.
Well, we talked yesterday about poll numbers coming out of the Portland area where like 59% disapproval rate for Governor Kotek up in that area. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's like the opportunity, it's a golden opportunity. And kind of what we're seeing right now is we're in like bullying, nasty narrative season of the primary. I mean, I'm seeing on the Republican side where it's the finger pointing and the name calling, the disingenuous, flat out lying, anonymous texts and all this stuff, and it's just so much distraction, and yet we're 6 days out.
Yeah, no, not a one of them, it seems, has come up with a cogent plan to A, defeat Tina Kotek in the general, and B, actually clean up state government. The messaging in the gubernatorial race is like it often is in the state of Oregon. It's, you know, hey, things are a mess, elect me and I'll clean things up, but there's no specifics. You know, it's been going on like that for years, and so it's as much on the candidates as it is on the media culture that exists in Oregon. There's barely any media, and they run cover for the dominant party.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the candidates who do have that experience and can present those ideas just can't seem to break through. And and then you've got a lot, like we've said, you know, we need to do this, we need to do that. We know that. We all know that. We all know what we need to do. What do you want to do? So it is frustrating. Again, we are 6 days out. And again, low poll numbers for the sitting governor across the board. So the opportunity is there to make some solid change. It's a start. It's at least a start. Where are we at on time, Hunter? We're just about the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, we got about 20 seconds or so, and I just sit here and it's
all the time.
Oregon is such a chicken or the egg mentality. It's like the egg being the sitting governor and the chicken being the voters, and it's like neither one of them wants to get, you know, rolling any direction. I'm going, you can't win if you don't start.
Neither one of them wants to cross the road, right?
Uh-huh. Gotta start somewhere. Come on. Let's do it today. Get out and vote.
Get out and vote. All right, everybody. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news and come on back with more with Jeff Reynolds. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. And of course, joining us today from restoration-news.com is Jeff Reynolds. So switching gears a little bit, but kind of in the same vein of, we keep saying we want to do these things and these things are good and this is what the goal is, but not so much. Jeff, you and I were talking recycling. Kind of a boondoggle, is, but it's another big. The narrative is there, the infrastructure, the money, everything behind it. You're doing so great, aren't you a good person? But how many exposés have been done that it all goes to the same place?
That's exactly right, and it goes to reinforce my point that I've been making for over a decade now, that recycling is a complete scam. It all goes into the landfill. If it were actually to do what it claimed it could accomplish, it wouldn't solve any problems, it would be labor intensive. You know, that's why sanitary landfills exist. That you contain it in one, you know, contained area, and it stays there and eventually breaks down over time. But the amount of land taken up by our landfills across the nation is minuscule. It's not an environmental catastrophe in any way. So recycling doesn't actually do anything except, I've heard for years that it's a job creation program for the sanitation companies at Metro and around Oregon. So,
It is. I 100% agree. Along those lines, a little bit different twist on this, though. The headline over at restoration-news.com is Green Machine targets plastics at consumer expense. I mean, how often are we made to feel guilty because we want to use, you know, cling wrap on our grapes, or, you know, I want to use, you know, plastic cutlery because I don't feel like washing, and you're made to feel like you should be using like wax paper made from organic bees, and it should be reusable, and you should hand wash it, otherwise you're a bad person.
Or organic bees, not those fake bees that come out of the factory, right?
Exactly.
So I mean, this article was enlightening, and it's by my colleague Kevin Mooney, who has written about energy and environment issues for quite some time. He breaks it down, and it's really a scheme between these NGOs and these nonprofits and corporate world. But they've wormed their way into corporate boardrooms, like, you know, Coca-Cola and Mondelez and Nestle and all these other companies, these mega corporations mm-hmm. that realize, hey, if we come up with all natural packaging, it'll be great for marketing and it'll cost more. So we'll have a better bottom line. We'll have a better profit margin because of the packaging, and people will pay for it. And that's the scam that's going on with getting rid of plastics and convenient packaging like that. So it's a whole thing that's being coordinated by the worst elements of American society.
Well, and it's all tied to, of course, you know, like banning oil, and how dare you? You don't want to be using any of that because it's bad for the, which is all of it's based on, it's not true. Mm-hmm. And there's study after study that prove that all of it is just a big scam.
Well, it feeds into this sort of self-loathing kind of self-hatred, mm-hmm. where it's white liberal guilt, right? Our entire way of life is destroying the planet, and you can go down the list, and it sounds good on paper, and it sounds good as a concept. And if you never investigate it, then it really is a crisis. If you investigate it, you realize that it's all BS, and it has absolutely no effect on the climate whatsoever. But you never get that far. It's all about saving the planet and feeding into that guilt loop that continues. We need more solutions. We need to do more things. I'm not doing enough to save the planet. It becomes a doom loop of guilt that these corporations and these nonprofit organizations feed into constantly and enhance that feeling of guilt until we're all paralyzed and unable to act or do anything that even resembles convenience in our modern life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just sit here and I go, you remember it was like, what, 2019 in the state of Oregon. We said we can't have plastic straws wrapped in paper. We need paper straws wrapped in plastic. You can't have plastic bags at the grocery store. You need to bring your own cotton bags. And then within, what, a year, COVID comes out and they go, well, we need to revert back to all of these things. And
yeah,
I just sit here and go,
that's a good point.
I'm going, what kind of scam is this? If it's truly that much of a difference maker, why are we switching back just because, you know, we need to build up the pandemic mentality?
Well, there's no greater example of the folly of these social trends in recycling than the debate between paper and plastic.
Yeah.
Paper used to be the end of the environment because we were cutting down trees. Now mm-hmm. paper is saving us from plastic. It just goes back and forth. It's the ultimate political football. It's a lot like what we talked about in the last segment about the political movements that we see that don't actually want to reach victory, right? If you can turn it into a political football that everybody kicks around, then everybody makes money and everybody's happy, right? That's exactly what recycling mm-hmm. is too. Is that, you know, we're never actually going to solve the problem, but boy, do we feel good trying.
Exactly.
Well, see, I always go to the, you know, in your local municipality, your garbage collection will tell you exactly where their priorities are. In a city like Portland or Salem, where we're all about saving the environment and recycling, okay, they pick up your garbage and your yard waste every week, but only pick up your recycling every other week. Why wouldn't it be the other way around if recycling was all so mighty and we need to save the world by recycling?
Well,
it probably has something to do with the participation rates where people just don't have that much recycling to put out or aren't bothering because it's all it's a giant waste of time.
Well, exactly. And the rules and the guidelines, and you can't do this. And you would think normally like a pizza box would go in the recycling, but no, because there's food in it. So where does it go? Yard waste? I mean, mm-hmm. where do you put it? So I'm just going to throw it away.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I just sit there and go, well, if that's the challenge, then I'm assuming that these garbage companies need to start handing out participation trophies to everybody.
Oh.
Because that way it's 100%.
That'll do it.
That way it really builds up confidence in it with, you know, participation trophies.
Boy, you know what, Hunter, you're absolutely dead on there. That is exactly what this is. This is the result of participation trophy culture that has been developed through our childhood. Now, we've been conditioned to think that we are having an effect on the entire world just by recycling our paper plates.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There's no accomplishment. There's no effort. It's very easy to do that. And again, when you look at an issue that is a very big global issue and you feel like you're doing something by tweeting about it or, you know, wearing a pin or using a plastic straw, you're not really making any change.
Or guilting your neighbor over it. That's the most important part of it.
Exactly.
Your neighbor is the bad guy and you can really blame him.
But then I go and I look and we look at videos of Wallace Marine Park. Mm-hmm. So you've got an NGO or a nonprofits over there and government organizations trying to, you know, fix the homelessness problem. But then you've got an environmental catastrophe. But yet they're over here guilting you into not recycling, or you don't recycle, you're the bad person. Meanwhile, look at what's going into the Willamette River. So when you pull out and look at the whole thing, I mean, it's no wonder, frankly, I'm a bit cynical about the whole thing.
Absolutely. You bring up a great point about the homeless camps, too, because they are absolutely an ecological disaster. But it's also inhumane to sweep the homeless camps. So they don't really actually want to solve the problem. Again, there are solutions right in front of your face that these people do not want to take because they seem mean. That's really it.
Well, that is really
I don't think it's because they seem mean. I think they want to convince you it seems mean so they can pocket a lot of money.
And also blame you for wanting to sweep the homeless camp.
Exactly. All right, let's take a quick break. We have another one, a little bit of a different take on this that I want to drop. There's an article over at restoration-news.com that kind of ties into this. So again, we're talking with Jeff Reynolds from restoration-news.com. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Okay, well, all this week we have been holding our first Mariners ticket giveaway, and Hunter, we have a winner to announce.
We're going to announce that Philip is going to be the big winner of some Mariners tickets for this Saturday. Philip, if you're out there listening, we will get those tickets emailed to you shortly after the show comes to its conclusion today. Enjoy. It should be a great game this weekend, even if the weather isn't what we had last weekend.
Yeah, no kidding. Congratulations, Philip. And again, we will be doing more of these, so have no fear. You'll have more chances throughout the summer. Okay, again, we're wrapping up our conversation, which always goes by way too fast with Jeff. Another headline that kind of ties into what we were talking about, a little more, you know, kind of broadening the scope on it here, talking about China-backed litigators crippling Louisiana energy. So domestic energy. There's some folks that are, we've got it in their sights.
Yeah, that's right. And this is another banger of a piece from my colleague, Kevin Mooney, the environmental writer. And he points out that we've seen so much ridiculous litigation against big oil. You know, the left wants to take down big oil and thinks that they're the root of all evil in the world. So they've filed innumerable lawsuits throughout the nation, states all over, but they've focused in on Louisiana, which is a big energy state, oil and natural gas exporter, and obviously a lot of offshore drilling as well. And so in Louisiana, they have sued to try to stop expansion of the LNG exports and also more drilling. And colleague Kevin has found all of these ties to the Chinese Communist Party, which is funding one of the main groups that's behind these lawsuits. So what it really boils down to is that it's not at all about saving the world or cleaning up the environment. It's literally China trying to take down America's energy dominance and cripple us globally. And they do that on purpose, and dress it up as something that's, you know, noble and saving the world. And I actually talked about this in my book, Behind the Curtain, back in 2019. We know going back to the 60s, at least, that the Chinese communists and the Soviet communists would infiltrate leftist protest groups. Greenpeace was propped up very much by the Soviet Union. And the Chinese communists would infiltrate the peace movement in the Bay Area of California in the 60s.
Yeah.
And they were trying to push things further than they would normally go in a regular protest movement. You know, so this is a long time effort by our global adversaries to use our freedom against us to undermine us. And now they're using the court system as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You see that. Well, you see that. You look at, I mean, even just the feminist movement and, you know, the environmental movement. We knew one of the founders of Greenpeace actually left Greenpeace because of that, because he saw what was happening on. And then a lot of it is the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so you'll get these coalitions that are built to really, what the bottom line is to take down Western civilization, because everything runs on petrol fuel. I mean, fossil, I don't like the term fossil fuels, but that's the fact. So
I don't either.
Yeah, because it's not a true descriptor of what that is. But the article also goes into the role of dark money, and it's not just the Chinese, and some of it's domestic.
Yeah, a lot of it's domestic, and that's, you know, I've been tracking this for years. I wrote a book about it. Kevin wrote a book about it. He's been tracking it for years. And you know, so this is well known. This is well established fact. This is not speculation, and right. We've seen all of these nonprofit organizations take advantage of the 501c3 tax rules to shield themselves from tax liability, shield their donors from exposure, and then use all this money that they've pooled together. It's billions of dollars that they've pooled together and sue to undermine our modern way of life. It really is that stark. I was at the Heartland Institute conference on climate change in mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. in April.
Yeah.
And ran into Craig Rucker, who's the president of CFACT, and one of the sensible environmental
yes,
groups
yes.
that opposes climate change. Mm-hmm. And so, but he pointed out that if you go to Grok or ChatGPT or any of the AI engines, they will all come to the same conclusion that the pro-global warming crowd has somewhere on the order of $40 billion combined on an annual basis that they spend, you know, between all the NGOs and nonprofits. They spend about $40 billion a year on campaigns and litigation, whereas the folks pushing back against the global warming narrative have somewhere on the neighborhood of $200 million a year.
Ooh.
So it's they have like, what is it, 20 times the amount of money that we do. And yet we're being more effective because we have to have truth on our side. So we're starting to see the tide turn that the green movement might be dying out because it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And once you sort of peel back some of the layers and the facade that's on there that's put out for public consumption, you do see right through it. But you're right. There's a lot of money. There's a lot of familiar names, you know, Ford yep. Foundation, Moore Foundation, obviously Arabella Advisors, which we all know about, Bezos, Bloomberg. So, again, big money that has the levers of control, especially in media and a narrative that's being pushed out there. But it does seem like a lot of people are seeing through this because you're not seeing anything getting better. And if there's no results coming out, Norm and Norma start to see that.
Well, they do, except in Oregon, where they keep voting yeah. for the same crap, you know.
Right, so okay.
We just discussed this in a previous segment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah, you're right. You don't see any results. You don't see any of these Al Gore predictions ever coming true.
No.
And so, you know, after a while, it just becomes a joke, and people see through it. And I think Donald Trump has won on this argument that it's a lot better for America and for your way of life if we have cheap, reliable energy. And I
yes.
think, you know, as however coarsely he makes that argument, he makes it very well and very convincingly that we cannot survive in our modern society
right.
without cheap, abundant, reliable energy. And we're sitting, America, we're sitting on vast quantities of
yes.
oil and natural gas. And we also just took over all the oil and natural gas in Venezuela. And we're probably going to be taking control of whatever Iran is able to continue to produce. And so, you know, it, all of a sudden, we hold all the cards on the global scene. On the international scale, nobody else has the power that we've accrued over all of this. And that puts us in a serious position of leverage.
Yes, and we better just need the fortitude to stay the course and stay on that. One thing I know that what the left might want to do, because a lot of these things seem very, you know, the paper straws and plastic versus plastic straws and paper. Well, you know, next we're going to see what are they going to ban, like Sunday drivers, don't be an aimless driver. You better know where you're going. You better have a destination in mind or you're going to be fined.
Mm-hmm. So that's a little satire that we saw earlier today.
Is it Hunter? Well, we had to double check.
We had to literally double check and make sure. And thank goodness that the person that posted it at the end of the post admitted that it was a false thing. But he sent out a little press release that says, well, the state of Washington's done it. They have now made it illegal to go driving without a destination. Whether you're just driving to blow off some steam or going on a cruise, you'd better have a destination, because if you get pulled over, it'll be $1,000 ticket if you can't tell the police where you're headed.
But doesn't that the reason why we couldn't tell it was a joke or not? I mean, I kind of had an inkling, because I don't think we've quite gone that insane yet. But half the time, those are the solutions that you get from the NGOs, the leftists, the progressives, whatever it is that's going to make your life less fun, more miserable, harder for you, especially in, you know, the United States of America. It just seems to be that's the strategy all the time. Hence, was this a joke or is this real?
We probably should have recognized it, because it didn't have a carve out for electric vehicles. If you're an electric vehicle, you can just cruise as far as it'll take you.
That's right. No, that's the problem with satirizing the left, is that it gives them ideas for future actions, and then it won't be satire anymore.
I love it. There's a reader's there's a context message below it. Now, Washington State does not have Senate Bill 626 or any bill by that number outlawing aimless drivings. And I just want to go yet.
That's right. That's the problem with the Babylon Bee, too, right? Is that they've got so much competition from actual real things that lefties are doing that anything they make up sounds kind of, you know, realistic.
It's getting harder and harder to satirize things. All right. We are just about out of time with you, Jeff. Again, Jeff is the senior editor at restoration-news.com. We have him on at least with us twice
a month,
every other Tuesday or Thursday rather. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to continue that into the future, because there's always great conversations. Definitely bookmark restoration-news.com. Always good stuff out there in both of these articles. And again, if you missed anything, everything will be linked up in show prep.
And congratulations to Philip, and anybody out there that's looking for Mariners tickets in the future, go like our Facebook page and all of our other social medias and our podcasts, and, you know, find us out there. Get really keyed in and get some Mariners tickets down the road here.
Yeah. And don't do any aimless Sunday driving this weekend, you guys. Come on now.
I only know one guy that's going to do aimless driving this weekend.
All righty, but that is, thanks for hanging out with us this week. We got great shows planned for you next week. Have a great day.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.